Okay. Welcome to Rabbeinu B'chaye Parshios Nitzavim Vayelech. The year is rolling down to a close, and it's interesting, you know, I'm going through the Parshios of Nitzavim Vayelech, which Stamazoi talk about the idea of Geula and some very basic Hashkafos, you know, that the Torah ends off with. Also found there are a number of Rabbeinu B'chayes that are very unique and distinctive, where also he's also looking into the future, talking about the Geula, talking about the very nature of our commitment to Torah Mitzvahs, a number of things which I thought were very, very striking. I wanted to start with a Rabbeinu B'chaye, the beginning of Nitzav and Perichov Tes Pasuk Yud Ches. And here the Rabbeinu B'chaye is a fascinating discussion about the importance of machshava, the importance of thought. And Bez Hashem, I want to relate this Rabbeinu B'chaye to Rabbeinu B'chaye a little bit later on in Parshas Nitzavim as well, where he also focuses on the importance, the centrality of thought, in some cases being even more important than action, than deeds. Pasuk says, after detailing the bris, which is being forged with the Jewish people, so the Pasuk describes a hypothetical individual or individuals in Pasuk Yud Zayin. Hem yesh bochem isho isho mishpacha o shevet asher levavo fone hayom im Hashem alokeinu leleches labrus Elohei agoyim ahem hem yesh bochem shorosh porosh velano. Right? Perhaps there's a man or a woman or a family or a whole tribe among you whose heart is turning today from Hashem, our God, to go and worship the gods of the nations. When this hypothetical person hears the words of this curse, this he'll bless himself in his heart. He won't be so concerned. He'll say, Shalom Yi Eli, things will be good for me. And we'll translate those words more precisely when we get to Rabbeinu B'chaye. But basically the guy says to himself, he's not talking about me, right? All these terrible things are going to befall the one who worships Avodah Zarah, the other guy, right? I'm going to be fine. No, continues the pasuk. Oz yeshan af Hashem kinoso bo ishahu rav sabo kol olak suva basefer hazeh. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to bring the klolos against him anyway, right? So, kamas are a bit of a chaye. Ar bishruus libi eilech. It's a few lines in to pasuk Yud Ches. It's possible to explain, and Rabbi Shigal points out that this is the pirush of the Ramban as well. Bishrirus libi. What's the pasuk? What's the meaning of the phrase? Ki bishrirus libi eilech. What does that mean? Bechosek. In the strength of my heart, I will go. Hulashin razal ashrasa didaini shehu kiyum bezdin. When the Bezdin puts its stamp of approval on something, that word is ashrasa, and that word is the same word as bishrirus over here. So when the person says bechozek libi eilech, I'm going to just continue on in the strength of my heart. I don't care what is threatened against me. V'zeh she'omer l'man sos harava es atzmeya harasha mishalel b'mifalim ro'im ba'omer l'leches b'chozek libo kidei she'osef simon b'nafsho she'hoi sarava klomer sova amitavas k'ula salveira ha'i v'yachzer os atzmeya. Right, the Rasha is looking to fulfill his taivus. Ki libo chazak b'taivus of machshavos ra'os tamid kol hayom. Right, his heart is strong in the sense that his heart is firmly implanted in this world of running after his own taivus and his, you know, machshavos ra'os, his terrible thoughts. Ki b'shrirus libi eileich, I'm going to follow the strong inclinations of my heart. That's the lashon shrirus. So, what seems to be the case in this pasuk is that we're focusing on his thoughts, and a few lines later, the Rebbeinu B'chaye makes that point. Va'ach im eino motzi machshavto lepoal, harehu nenash ala machshava belev. Even if this guy is only thinking about worshipping Avodah Zarah and thinking about abandoning the covenant of Hashem, nonetheless, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to punish him for his thoughts. Again, if you look back at the Pasuk can be interpreted in two different ways, but the focus in the Pasuk seems to be what he's thinking about. Right? Peyesh Bochem Yishol Yishol Avodah Osheva Asher Levavo. Lest there be someone among you whose heart is turned aside from Hashem. Not that he goes and worships other idols, right? Not that he goes and worships idols, that worships other gods.
He thinks about it.
Right? He thinks about it. This barech bilvavo leimar shalom yihyeli. He thinks to himself, I'm fine, right? He hasn't done anything, right? The mere fact that he's thinking to himself, let me go worship idols. And I'm not concerned about all of the curses. The mere thoughts alone are enough to condemn this person to this terrible fate. That seems to be what the Pesukim are talking about.
When did you ever say that a machshava and not a deed, that you get punished for a machshava?
Okay, so that question is going to be the whole focus of Rabbeinu B'chai. Once Rabbeinu B'chai has introduced this idea to us that, if you look in the Pasuk is not really focusing on his misdeeds, it's focusing on his poor thoughts. So then that opens up the whole question. Again, so why are we punishing the guy for his thoughts? What are the thought police over here? So the answer is going to be yes, eventually. Right? But let's see how he catches it. Right? Hareu ne'nasha machshava b'leif. Uvezek kiveng shlomo al v'sham masha omer. Leiv someach yitav ponim. Uvasevis leiv ruach necheya. Right? When Shlomo HaMelech says in Mishlei, that a happy heart gladdens the face, but sadness of heart breaks the spirit. In other words, your mood is based on what's in your heart. Okay. Be'er. But says Rabbeinu B'chaye, Shlomo HaMelech is not just sharing with us a psychological insight, he's sharing with us a religious insight. What's the religious insight? Shlo yakel be'enei ha'adam inyan ha'machshava. Don't dismiss the importance of thought. Because the happiness of the body or the sadness of the body is dependent upon one's thoughts. Now, what Rabbeinu B'chai seems to be saying in Mishlei is something along the lines of what today we would call a psychosomatic approach, right? Your mood impacts on you physically. So Lev Someach Yetiv Panim, the way Rabbi B'chai seems to learn it, doesn't just mean if you're happy you'll smile, but if you're happy you'll be healthy. And Asevis Lev Ruach Necheya doesn't just mean if you are depressed you'll be grumpy, it means if you're depressed you'll be sick. Right? Which is not exactly the same thing. It's not just that your thoughts impact on your mood. Your thoughts impact on your physical health, which we know is true. I mean, it's not the be all and end all of everything. If somebody drops a piano on your head, you could be as happy as you want, but you're still going to have to go to the hospital, right? It's not all about
you can't carry a tune,
right? 100%, right? You definitely can't carry a tune, on your back. It's not all about the psychosomatic approach, but certainly your mood does have an impact, a serious impact, on your physical health. So that's what he says, don't make light of machshavos, right? Because your happiness or your sadness, your health or your lack of health, are dependent on machshava. V'im kein, harei ha-machshava she'im in ha-lev yotz'al l'po'al miskales b'guf ha-adam. So you see that there is this connection between your machshava and your body. The machshava, which is an intangible object, the thought, which is an intangible object, comes out of you and permeates your body and impacts it. Umeyata. And here, this one's for Rabbi Reuben. Umeyata, from here, says Rabbeinu B'chaye, Yisponein ha'adam be'atzmo godel secharo im yismach b'mitzvos. Let the person contemplate how great the reward is if he not only does mitzvahs, but is happy doing mitzvahs. The Gadol Onshon Yismach Ba'Aveira. And think about how great his punishment is when he rejoices over an Aveira. And similarly, when you are upset, in other words, if you show regret over having done an aveira, that's a very powerful thing. If you do a mitzvah with feelings of regret, that may erase the mitzvah in its entirety. In other words, your mood, the same way your mood impacts on your physical health, your mood can influence your spiritual health in terms of the performance of mitzvahs. And here he goes on to say as follows, right? V'zeu sha'aru chazal hirhuri avera koshin me'avera. That's what Chazal said, the Gemara in Yuma. Thoughts of an avera are stronger than the avera itself. Why? Why does that make any sense? L'fi ha'shi'ahiru hazeh yosim le'pu'ulo miskaleh baguf. Because the thoughts that you have will ultimately impact on your body. And in that sense, the hirhur without avera could be worse than the avera without hirhur. What does it mean, the avera without hirhur? So on one level, it could mean a person who does an avera by accident, right? A guy who flips on a light on Shabbos accidentally feels this terrible regret over what he did, right? He's a shomer Shabbos who messed up. As opposed to the guy who maybe is keeping Shabbos, but, you know, in his heart of hearts, he spends the whole day thinking about how lousy it is that he has to keep Shabbos, and how he wishes he could be out there, you know, out on the town doing whatever, being Mechal Shabbos in a million different ways. In some ways, the hirur without the actual Avera is worse than the Avera without the actual hirur, because the hirur permeates your body. And it influences who you are. The guy who happens to accidentally switch on a light on Shabbos is still a shomer Shabbos. He's still committed to the ideas of Shabbos. He made a mistake. He forgot. The guy who is pro forma keeping Shabbos, but is itching not to, and hates it, and wishes, you know, more than anything else, he could get out there and be mechallel Shabbos. It's just, you know, he has social pressures or whatever, you know, or he just can't find the elevator button to push it, you know? I mean, it's, they keep moving it, right? If for whatever reason he just can't do it, on some level that's worse than the guy who is actually Mechal Shabbos B'Shogeg, because the guy who wants with all of his body, with all of his desires to break Shabbos and just doesn't for whatever reason, fundamentally he's turning himself into a person who doesn't accept the ideals of Shabbos.
But it's an unfair comparison when you do something compared to a person who's Shogeg. And let's say the person, the hero, makes it. The person, Shogeg, by definition, he had no intention to do it. So he doesn't have a desire to turn on this switch on Shabbos or not. The person who wants to be Mechal Shabbos has a very strong desire, yet at the same time, he's controlling it. And we're not giving him credit that he's right. Controlling. We're finding all kinds of faults. Community pressures or whatever, he can't do it even though he wants to do it. Why don't we say, look at him, he wants to, he's really at the bit, and he's controlling himself for whatever reason. He deserves credit, maybe even more than someone who does something to show.
So the truth is, I would agree with that. I think Chazal agree with that. In other words, Chazal say, if a person sits and just is not over an Aveira, there's a tremendous schar associated with that. But the way I would characterize that in the Rabbeinu B'chaya's paradigm is that the guy has two thoughts. Right? He's of two minds, in a sense. There's a part of him that's saying, I want to be Mechal Shabbos, and there's a part of him that's saying, no, you can't be Mechal Shabbos.
But that's conflict.
Right, and the truth is, such a person, you know, can be held up in great esteem because he overcomes the Yetzer Hara in that case. I think what Rabbeinu B'chaya is talking about is a guy who be'etzem him. Yeah, no, again, I don't want to judge any particular individual, but let's say, you know, a guy who says, I would be Mechal Shabbos if I just had the opportunity. I just don't have the opportunity, right? No, it's, you know, again, I gave an example of community pressure, right? He really doesn't believe in it at all. It's not a struggle. It's not that there's a part of him that says, no, how can you do that in Shabbos? I would go out and be Mechal Shabbos in a minute. But you know what? I happen to live in Mea Sharim, you know? it's really hard to be Mechal Shabbos in Mea Sharim. You know, the Estonia. I mean, it's, you know. that's a little hard, you know. But I mean, I have no compunctions about it whatsoever. I have no, it's not that I have a guilt feeling or anything like that. I'd go out and do it tomorrow. The opportunity doesn't present itself. I would love to go out and have chazer. I can't find any, right? You know, it's something like that. You know, there's a guy who says, you know, there's nothing holding me back. It's just that I don't have the opportunity to do this Aveira. I wish I had the opportunity to do this Aveira. In some ways, that's worse than the guy who ends up actually doing the Aveira, but has, or even does the Aveira b'mezid, but feels such a feeling of guilt and regret, you know, that he did the Aveira, because, you know, the machshava shows you who you are as a person. Right, the action is just carrying out what is the real person, which is ultimately the machshava.
I'll say that a person was to say, "Look, I want to eat chaza. I wish I can eat a place to do what I'm called the awesome."
Right.
But my answer, but it's same question. Well, what can I do? The person says no.
Right, but there's a difference between saying.
I want to do it.
Right, but there's a difference between saying I would love to eat chaza, except that God says it's aser, versus I would love to eat chaser, and I don't care that God says it's aser. I can't find it. I'm in Borough Park. I can't find a trefa place. You know, the worst I can find is a place that has two ashkafas as opposed to five ashkafas. You know, that's the closest I can come to having a piece of chaser, right? So that's not what Chazal were praising. You know, Chazal were praising a guy who says, you know, my desire to give up chaser is not because I hate the taste of pig or because it disgusts me. It's because I have an allegiance to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's very different than a guy who says, I have no allegiance to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I would do it in a minute, except that the opportunity hasn't presented itself.
I think that during the Aveira, at the hero, it's just where he came upon it. It just by chance he came upon it. He didn't think about it before, and
right.
Now he's doing it. Yeah, it's wrong, but it's here and he does it.
Right.
Even the moment, they just didn't think of it beforehand
right.
And plan it out.
Right, right. So again, it could be a show gig, or it could be, like you say, a case of mazed where there wasn't a lot of thought that really went into the performance of the other.
Somebody just
right.
Thinking about sinning.
Right.
You just haven't yet had the opportunity.
Right. And I think that, you know, the person who does it in the heat of the moment typically will feel a tremendous amount of regret having done the Aveira, once he realizes what he did, and it's that regret which is very, very powerful, and ultimately, you know, that charata is an important component to the idea of tshuva. So just to bring this back to last week's parsha, which I know Rabbi Reuben wants to do, at least at some point, you know, the famous comment of the Rambam, based on the end of the Tochacha, why are these terrible things coming upon the Jewish people? Tachas ha-shalav adatosh ha-shashem elokecha v'simcha. You didn't serve Hashem with simcha. In other words, as the Rambam puts in Hilchos Lulav, you served God, you did all the mitzvahs, but without the simcha. So of course the question is, so what do you want from the poor guy? I mean, he did everything he was supposed to do. Right? We did everything we're supposed to do. We didn't do it with simcha. So you're beating us up, you bring the tochacha upon us because of the failure to have simcha. So Rabbeinu B'chaya would say, yeah. I mean, it's a scary thing, but that's essentially it. Your attitude is everything. Your attitude is not just nice, you know, it's nice to have a good attitude. The attitude is the essence of everything. In a sense, it would be better, and that's what Rabbeinu B'chaya seems to be saying, in a sense it would be better if the person would have done more Averos, but with a sense of regret, and maybe fewer mitzvahs, but with a sense of simcha. In other words, the person emotionally would be committed to the system of Torah and mitzvahs, even if their actions fell short, right? Versus the person who does everything they're supposed to do, but the attitude is so off that they're, you know, that again, the pasuk says the tochacha comes upon such a person. You know, in Jewish life, sometimes we joke about the person who's a Jew in the heart, right? You know, what does it mean to be a Jew in the heart? You know, the cardiac Jew. You know, Rabbi, I don't keep Shabbos, I don't keep kosher. You know, I don't fast on Yom Kippur, but in my heart, I'm a Jew. So right, so we tend to make light of that. And again, I'm not advocating that you know, people should, you know, throw all the mitzvahs overboard and just be Jews in their heart and feel have a nice Jewish feeling or so. But Rabbeinu B'chaya is suggesting, you know, that there might be more to that than we think. In other words, the person who sincerely has a sense of commitment to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in his heart and wants to do mitzvahs and shuns the idea of Averos but for whatever reason has a harder time putting that into practice, is not a person to be dismissed lightly, right? Again, you know, there obviously there's a big spectrum in what that could be, right? I think there's a huge difference between the person says, you know, I somebody once told me, you know, I'm a good Jew. I keep the, you know, I keep the Ten Commandments, right? But you don't keep Shabbos. Yeah, I keep the Ten Commandments. What Shabbos have to do with the Ten Commandments, right? You know, that kind of attitude versus the person who's in the system of Torah and Mitzvahs, you know, and just like all of us falls short, but wishes they could be doing more and wishes they could be better about holding back Naveiros. The machshavos of a person determine where the person is. That's what Rebbe Bechai is really telling us. And when a person has a love for mitzvahs and a hatred for Averos in his heart, even when that doesn't always translate into practice, that is something incredibly powerful. And on some level, maybe even more important than the person who hates mitzvahs and loves Averos, but is doing the right things for various other reasons, you know, that have to do with other things.
FFB was pointing out why Shemai Bali Chu make them feel uncomfortable. Because, you know, they have the heart, you know, and they're striving to get to where the FFB is supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
And they make the FFB feel guilty that they're not doing their way
the way that they're supposed to be doing. Right. So I want to skip through a little bit in this piece. Yeah, it's a beautiful piece, worthwhile seeing the whole thing inside, but I really just want to pick out a few things. On the facing page of Rabbi Shavel, on Taf Lamed Gimel, so a few lines afterwards, the third line in Rabbi Shavel, V'im Yishal HaShoel, and if you will ask me, Heyach Yanish HaKosuv Alahiru below Maisa, how can the Torah over here punish you for your thoughts and not for your deeds? Ki bevadai ein ha'olam yachol lishlob be'atzmo shlol yalu b'libo machshavos ros. I mean, you don't really have control over your thoughts. You know, you can think things involuntarily. It's not that God holds you responsible for your thoughts. Your actions, you can hold yourself back. But here the pasuk seems to be saying, if I think this, zap, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to get you. Oh, ooh, just the thought fell into my head. What do you want from me? Vim kein lama yanish hamash eino biyado. How can God punish you for something which is not up to you? Avolo diacha ikar adavar. Let me explain it to you what this is all about, says the Rabbeinu Bechaye. Yodua ki b'chiras ha'maisim mesura b'yado l'adam v'latov. We all know that when it comes to actions, you have free will, you have free choice. You can choose to do the good, choose to do the bad, right? Re'einu sa'atul v'nachayom sa'chayim v'satov v'chayim v'chayim. We're going to say later on in the parasha. But you have to know that gam b'chiras ha'machshava mesura b'yado Achar ha-hachonos. The same way that you can choose to do good or do bad, you can also choose to think good or to think bad. The machshavos are in your power. You do have free will, not only with regard to what you do, but you have free will with regard to what you think. Achar ha-hachonos, if you make the proper preparations. It's harder than choosing to do the right thing. But if you prepare yourself properly, you can make the choice consciously to only think good. How do you do that? Ki nivstavashi achshav machshava tova, v'nizharshi ifne milibo melachshav machshava ra, v'hu nigmal al machshava atova v'nena shal ra machshava ra. Because after all, we know that must be something that's in your hands to do, to, you know, to only think good thoughts and to stay away from bad thoughts, because here the Torah is promising a reward for good thoughts and punishment for bad thoughts. Umashu lifamim yolidu selfo v'rayonav machshavos bilti tovos v'yalu alavavu v'pesapistom hihur ro'i'ulim shlovim miskave. Aye! But a person, from time to time, maybe even more from time to time, has thoughts that involuntarily go through his head. Right, all kinds of things that you imagine, that you fantasize about, that you think about. You know, how can you tell me with a straight face that your machshavos are in your hand, that you can come somehow control them? Says Rabbeinu Bechaye, hineze terem ha'achonos. That's because you didn't prepare yourself properly. Fusimen amichshol v'hachet. And the fact that you have these thoughts is a sign of the fact that you haven't worked and perfecting your thoughts, and instead you're stuck in a rut of sin. You veered off of the path, and you haven't built up your neshama with the proper preparations. The way to fix it is to prepare yourself. That is to put your focuses on Hashem. And you should subjugate all of your thoughts to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And when the evil thought comes, so try to push it aside. If you allow the thought to linger, that's when you're going to be punished. When you focus your thoughts constantly on the love of God and the closest to God and to walk in the path of God, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will reward you to ensure that you don't think of evil things. Right? Only good things will come into your thoughts. And concerning such a thing, Chazal tell us, if you try to purify yourself, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will help you out. In other words, if one can paraphrase, I think, somewhat freely over here, says Rabbeinu Bechaye, you can control your thoughts, but it's a process. You're not going to control your thoughts in an instant, but your thoughts, the things you focus on are naturally the things you're going to think about, right? I mean, just to take an extreme example, a person, looks constantly at pornography, right? So even when you're not looking consciously at the pornography, the pornographic thoughts are going to steal into your head, because that's what you've accustomed yourself to thinking about, right? So let's say the person, wants to do tshuva. He spent a long time looking at pornography, and he wants to do tshuva. He wants to pull himself away from it. It's not so pashut, because he's developed this whole cachet of thoughts. I mean, the thoughts that you have are things that you spend time thinking about in other contexts. So you've developed this whole cachet of thoughts which are with you and which don't go away so quickly and which sneak into your consciousness over and over and over again. So, if a person wants to think only about good things, you just have to start focusing as much as possible on good things, on Kedusha, on Tahara. The person in our pasuk who's thinking about Avodah Zarah is someone who obviously has spent some time before thinking about Avodah Zarah. In other words, it's not just a chance thought. Guy's walking down the street one day and suddenly he has a thought pop into his head. Hey, wouldn't it be a great idea to go worship idols? That thought is a culmination of a whole thought process that got him to that place. Maybe it was a thought process that started off with a dissatisfaction with his relationship to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or a lack of caring about his relationship to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Or he saw something about idolatry that piqued his interest, and he stopped for a minute, to watch the TV program about, some idolatrous religion. Or he walked by the store that Terach store that was selling idols, and he didn't just keep going. He peeked in the window for a couple of minutes. All of the sum total of all of those thoughts ultimately brings the person to a point where he really starts thinking, maybe Avodah Zarah is not so bad. And he chews on that thought. He lets that thought linger. And it's at that point that the person is punished for that thought. Because it's not just a thought that fell out of nowhere into his head. It's a thought that he allowed to develop in his head. And conversely, you can train yourself to think about good things. If you think about good things, you will continue to think about good things. But it takes training. It's not something that happens overnight. But the person has to want to train himself in that matter. And that's what he concludes. If you really want to do it, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to help you do it. Right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not going to leave you hanging. But you have to want to do it. You can't expect to think good, without training your thoughts. This idea of training your thoughts, I mean, again, it's a very powerful idea. It's a very important idea. It's an idea with which the Torah is, in a sense, ending off at the end of Parshas Nisavim. but it applies to so many things. It applies, you know, Rabbeinu Bachai puts it in terms of good thoughts versus bad thoughts. It also applies just in terms of thoughts about Limud HaTorah and, you know, just thinking in general. They say that the Chaim Soloveitchik used to turn to members of his family just randomly and ask them, tell me what you're thinking about. Now, the truth is, again, if somebody oftentimes would turn to me and say, what are you thinking about? I would answer very honestly, not much. Right? Not really, not, one panel on the ceiling, two panels on the ceiling, three panels on the ceiling, right? I mean, oftentimes, again, maybe not speaking for any of the other tzaddikim in the room, but I mean, I'm just speaking personally. Oftentimes their minds are kind of blank. You know, they're not really thinking about anything in particular. Reb Chaim certainly wasn't that way. Reb Chaim wanted to train the members of his family that the wheels in the head should constantly be in motion. You should constantly be thinking about something proactively. And the something, according to Reb Chaim, was not just, you know, thinking about baseball scores. Reb Chaim wanted to train the people in his family to think about Torah, to think about learning. Right? So, it's inconceivable that a person would be just kind of sitting there and not thinking about some sugya or another. Right? I read recently one of the biographies of Reb Nosson Tzvi Finkel, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, the Mir Rosh Yeshiva. It describes over there in the biography how, again, Reb Nosson Tzvi was a tremendous masmid, despite tremendous, you know, physical difficulties, and, you know, the vision that he had for the Mir Yeshiva was a place where there would be tremendous hasmada, but also tremendous hasagas in terms of learning a lot, you know, covering a lot of bikiyas. And it relates that he was overjoyed when a boy who came to the yeshiva, who was not a very good learner, came to him and said, Rebbe, I've been working on these sugyas so much, I went to sleep last night, I dreamt about the sugya. So to Reb Nosson Tzvi, that was the ultimate success. And in a sense, that's what Rabbeinu Bachai is talking about. You know, if you're thinking constantly about learning, you'll end up dreaming about learning, because that's going to be your life, that will be your mahus, that will be your character, that's going to be your very personality. Your thoughts are who you are, right? So you know, the person who has a thought to go worship Avodah Zarah, that's not just a thought that came out of nowhere, that's a thought that reflects something very deep seated in the personality, and something very wrong. It may not have been actualized yet, but the thought is something incredibly important as well. Yeah. Right, right. Or Yisrael and the Umos HaOlam when it comes to Machshava.
Yeah, that's the distinction.
Right, so Machshavas Avodah Zarah is the one exception to that. Well, here, it's interesting, in the Psukim, he's talking about Machshavas Avodah Zarah. Right, so, you know, in that sense, you know, you can relate it to the Psukim. In Rabbeinu Bechaye, I think Rabbeinu Bechaye is taking it further afield. He may not be talking about the immediate punishment, Rabbeinu Bechaye, but I think he's definitely saying whether there's an immediate punishment or not immediate punishment, certainly the person who's involved in Hihurei Aveira is going to create himself, he's going to make himself into a person who is, you know, whether he's technically punished or not, but is very despicable in the eyes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You know, I think sometimes you can have a personality of chait that doesn't necessarily carry a punishment with it, but is, you know, very, very much looked down upon by HaKadosh Baruch
Hu. Does Rabbi Bechaya, we have the expression, Tosha lo lishma bo lishma.
Right.
Does he accept that concept at all?
Yes.
Does he say you always have to have, there's no such thing as lo lishma,
right,
positively, and won't even have to go through that step?
Right, now, so the Gemara says we talk Shlo Lishma, Bo Lishma, so I think Rabbeinu Bechaye, you know, would be hard-pressed to reject that. There is a big discussion in Rishonim on the following point. I mean, on the one hand, the Gemara says we talk Shlo Lishma, Bo Lishma, right? On the other hand, the Gemara also says that Torah can be a Sam HaMavis, it can be a poison, if you utilize it with the wrong intentions. Right, if you're shalol lishma. So we shall differentiate between different types of shalol lishma. There's shalol lishma where you learn and do mitzvahs, you know, in order to get covered. There's shalol, which is not so bad, you know. There's where you learn and do mitzvahs in order to shtach somebody else, lekanter. In other words, you want to you know, you're learning in order to slug up the other guy, which is far worse. And then Noach lo shelo nivra, you know, better that such a person should never have been created. How does all of that relate to here? I don't know that Rabbeinu B'chai is saying that you know, you have to start off with absolute purity of thought. I think he's saying the opposite. If anything, it's some, he's describing a process that you have to build up to. But, you know, to ignore machshava, I think that's his point. In other words, Mitoch Shelo Lishma Baal Lishma says that there's a process to get to the best machshavas. But Rabbeinu B'chai is saying, but you have to undergo that process. In other words, to say, I don't care about the process. What you do is important. What you think is not important at all. That's wrong, says Rabbeinu B'chai. Your machshavas are very, very much an important part of who you are, and you're going to be held accountable, you know, for the machshavas that you have. It's interesting to note that Rabbeinu B'chai, a little bit further on in the Sedra, in the Parsha of Tshuva, where over there the Torah describes how b'fichol v'lvavcha la'asoso, perek lamed, posik yudalid, you know, kikar ve'lecha davar ma'od, this thing, whatever it is, Torah, tshuva, is very, very close to you, b'fichol v'lvavcha la'asoso, in your mouth and in your heart, it is possible to do it. So, Kamas Rabbeinu B'chaye, there are three things that are described in that phrase, b'fichol v'lvavcha la'asoso, your mouth, your heart, and to do it. All mitzvahs, he says, can be divided up into three chalokim, three different divisions. Mitzvahs that are dependent on the mouth, mitzvahs that are based in the heart, and mitzvahs that are based on maisa, on actions. And he says, Umin hayodua ki amitzvos hatluyos balev avodo gedolo HaKadosh Baruch Hu min amitzvos hatluyos bedibur. We all know that mitzvahs that are dependent on the heart are more precious to HaKadosh Baruch Hu than those that are dependent on the mouth. And in turn, you know, the mitzvahs that are dependent on the mouth are more precious to HaKadosh Baruch Hu than those that are dependent on action. The most important mitzvahs are the ones that are dependent on the heart. Right? The internal mitzvahs, the inner mitzvahs, the mitzvahs of thought, of contemplation. Now, Rabbeinu B'chai says, Min HaYodua, everybody knows this. I don't know. I don't know that everybody would necessarily say that. What, you know, I think a lot of people would say, no, mitzvahs that you do that are active mitzvahs are much more important than contemplative mitzvahs. Right? But this idea that the contemplative mitzvahs are ultimately the most important, I think is of one piece with what Rabbeinu B'chai is saying in this piece, that machshava, you know, to put it in real estate terms, machshava, machshava, machshava. You know, everything comes back to your thoughts. Thoughts shape who you are, you know, even more so than actions. It's true that in a particular case, you may get more reward for an action. You know, the mitzvah can be culminated with an action as opposed to what you think in your heart. But ultimately, the measure of the person is what's inside his heart. Hence, the most important mitzvahs are the ones that dictate how you're supposed to think. You know, the mitzvahs that dictate what you're supposed to have inside of you, because that ultimately will affect your entire personality, as opposed to a specific mitzvah, which is a specific act, but isn't as all-encompassing as the mitzvah that's dependent on the heart.
The B'chaya did not differentiate between the thoughts that one has in his heart or the thoughts that one has when he's doing the mitzvah. Wouldn't that sort of combine both the thought and the action? Because we always say action is more important than just
right.
Contemplating.
In this piece, B'fichol v'lavcha la'asoso, what he's really talking about is mitzvahs that are purely thought. So, for instance, in other words, there's a mitzvah to believe in God.
Okay.
Right? So, in other words, mitzvahs like that are pure thought are, he says, ultimately the most precious mitzvahs in the eyes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I guess, because again, the thought, as he's explaining over here, defines the personality in a way in which, you know, okay, putting up a mic on your roof is important, right? But it's not as all-encompassing as, you know, the thought to believe in God.
Yeah. The point that Hashem makes in the mitzvahs is to go ahead and by your action, that changes your thought process.
Right. I mean, that
the point of all, I mean, why do I shake a little bit or anything? It's the Well, when I do that, I'm supposed to change my thought process.
Right. So, I mean, two phrases, one from a Rishon, one from Chazal, come to mind. Right. So, in other words, the Sefer Achiruch writes, Acharei Pa'ulos from Shacham Alevavos, exactly your point. You know, the actions are going to influence the thoughts, right? But clearly what's implicit in there is that the thought is the main thing. And to... you know, to quote from right. No, so we don't go to that extreme, right? Because probably because we believe that it's not possible to just influence your thoughts without having actions. And I think we are justified in believing that, meaning, you know, to just sit back and have thoughts without putting that into practice in any way isn't really meaningful, right? I believe in helping the poor. So what do you do to help the poor? I sit in my armchair and I think about helping the poor. Well, that's nice.
Rabbi wouldn't approve that thought.
I think Rabbi Abachai would say, you know, that's an important thought, but if it just stays a thought, it's a little shallow, right? In other words, Judaism is a combination of thought and action, right? In other words, to just have thought, that's, I think, what Yaakov is saying, you know, with Lahavdil Christianity, you know, the focus is on thought as opposed to action. But, you know, another mimer from Chazal, which I think Rabbeinu Bechaye would go to town with, Rachmano Liba Boe. You know, the Ribbono Shel Olam desires the heart. You know, in the end of the day, it's the heart, you know, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants, right? I mean, what does Chazal say in Pirkei Avos? Right, when the five Talmidim of Yochanan ben Zakkai were sent out to find, you know, the Iker of Avodas Hashem, so the right answer was Lev Tov. You know, you should have a good heart. In other words, your machshava is what ultimately is going to determine everything. You know, think good, and you know, everything is going to fall into place.
Because also, you understand with this whole idea of the Rabbi saying that why the Rabbi had a kind of, I think, Shaila said,
right.
That the whole plan is it's all by rope, like robots. There's no feeling. It's just,
right.
Rock said, just all this, all like in Tom Todd. No feeling, no kavanah behind it. So that's one idea. And the other thing is, maybe now we can understand a little bit more, as I told you about 2 nights ago. Komar be'echad,
really
on Shanaisa, because.
Right.
The whole thing of Shema is thought.
Right, exactly. Right.
No,
Shema is all about the Kavanah. Right. If you don't have Kavanah during the first verse of Kriya Shema, you didn't say it. Right? Okay, Kavalik. So these two pieces of Rabbi Bechai, I think, very much fit together. The centrality of Machshava, which again, as the Torah is drawing to a close, I mean, it's really a very profound idea that the Torah is sharing with us, according to Rabbi Bechai, these two psukim. I want to conclude tonight with the Rabbeinu Bechaye, which, if you don't have Rabbi Shevel's edition, you're probably not going to have. I realized this actually looking for. First, I found this piece in Rabbi Shevel's edition. Then I was looking in one of the other editions and flipping through and trying to say, where'd it go? I'm pretty sure it was here. And I looked back at Rabbi Shevel's edition. He has a note that in the standard edition, this does not appear, but this piece does appear in the first printing of Rabbeinu Bechai, or the first manuscript of Rabbeinu Bechai. So it's Rabbeinu Bechai's piece. It corresponds to something which he writes in the Kan HaKemach, right, his other sefer. We know it's authentic. But for reasons which, I think once we see the piece, we could understand why it may have been dropped from some of the later editions. But at the same time, I think it's very, very relevant. This is in Perek Lamed, Pasuk Zayin. And the Pasuk there is saying that, you know, at the end of time, V'nasan Hashem Elokecha es kol ha'olos ha'eileh, God will place all of these curses al oivecha v'al sonecha asher edofucha. He will place all of these curses on your foes and on those who hate you, who persecuted you. Al oivecha v'al sonecha. So what's the difference between oivecha and sonecha? Right, Pashtus, there are two terms for enemies, right? So Zot Rabbeinu Bechaye, again, Willie, unfortunately you don't have it probably, unless you do have it, but Perek Lamed Pasuk Zayin, but it probably isn't in there, because again, Rabbi Shevel has it in his edition, but it's not in the other edition. So Skip Zayin. So hear this, and I think we'll understand why. I suspect this may have been taken up by a censor at some point or another. Aloivecha v'alsonecha. Oivecha, Yishmael. Sonecha, Esav. Oivecha and sonecha don't just refer to your enemies generically. Oivecha is Yishmael, and sonecha is Esav. And v'hein shtei ha'omo sh'anachnu mishubadim tachteim ufuzar b'neim. These are the two nations. Again, the Muslim world and the Christian world. Our cousins. That we are subjugated under them, and that we are scattered throughout them. And he goes on, he quotes a Gemara in Bava Basra. I'm going to skip through the Gemara a little bit. He says, Simon, Shasidin la'uf v'livroach eleinu v'lasheves v'tzileinu v'shiyidu lo behemo shalahem la'akriv mehem karbon. Ultimately, these two nations are going to run to us, and they're going to give us their own animals to bring us a karbon. In the future, these nations are going to convert, and they're going to latch on to the mitzvah of tefillin specifically, and they're going to latch on to the mitzvah of milah. She is kairu bibris itanu. Vakavana, kikavon shenasidin lischaber imar liskayer b'liosa amechad. Ultimately, both of these nations, Esav and Yishmael, are going to convert. They're going to become part of us. And ein sarach lomish shetachzar hasav ramalchus eilein. Certainly, at that time, kingship and rulership are going to return to us.
Why is oivecha Yishmael and sonecha Esav?
Oyev gadol min hasone. An oyev is worse than a sone. Ki asone afo pishi orio lo yasal derech rachmanos. A sone can give it to us hard, but a sone also has a degree of rachmanos. Aval ha'oyev hu shebelibo eva olamis. But an oyev is someone who has eternal unrelinquishing enmity. Lo yosim lo rachamim. He doesn't have any rachmanis whatsoever. Al zaken yachbid ulo me'od. He will even put his load very heavily on an old man. You can see this in the Hebrew language. Ki oyev hi meloshen avoy. Oyev comes from the word avoy, oyve, so to speak. If you fall into the hands of the sone, he hates you, but there's a chance for rachmanos. You fall into the clutches of an oyev, you go oyve, oyve avoy, that you fall into the hands of an oyev. Right? Yaakov mentioned Nazi Germany. I'm not sure if you meant that. Mm-hmm. Right.
You think that they're not such
Rachmanis. Right. Also, right. So the truth is, I mean, when all said and done, I certainly don't want to whitewash, the Nazis in any way. But there were here and there were individual examples of Rachmanis, even that some Nazis showed to Jews. Again, the Nazi remembered the Jew from way back when. We have stories like that come to us from the Holocaust. I mean, unfortunately not too many, but here and there, there were examples of Rachmanis even within the Nazis. But what he's saying, and again, as Tavshin Ayin Balad comes to an end, this is eerily relevant, that the Oyev, Yishmael, does not show Rachmanis under any circumstances. That's what he says. And therefore the Oyev, Yishmael, is far worse than the Sone, Esav. So he writes. Right? Well, one second. I'm just going to keep reading a little bit. I'm skipping a little bit. U'mipnei shebnei Yishmael koshin li Yisrael yoser mibnei Esav. Since we know that the children of Yishmael are worse for Yisrael than the children of Esau, that's why they're called,
That's where they're called oivim as opposed to sonim. V'chein amru, so too Chazal say in a medrash, Rabbi Shabel says, I can't locate this medrash, I don't know where this is. Tachas Edom v'lo tachas Yishmael. Better we should be subjugated by Edom rather than by Yishmael. Right? Now, it's just, again, you can look at the whole piece. I really suspect that this passage isn't in the standard editions because the censor took it out. I mean, it's not exactly complimentary, you know, to the Christian world. But what's
it's just better than the Arabs,
right? So, but what's very striking about it, again, when you put it into historical context, is that Rabbi Bechaye writes very strongly. You know, he's not a big fan of the Christian world, but far worse than the Christian world, he says, is the Muslim world. Rabbi Bechaye was in the 1300s. He was in Spain. Right. So right. Also, what's very striking is that when Rabbi Bechaye wrote this, the truth is, up until that point in history, the nation that probably, you know, could be accused of being the bigger anti-Semites were the Christians as opposed to the Muslims. Right. I'm not saying that.
13th century or in the.
You know, the 1300s. He was the Talmud of the Rashba.
So then it was before the Inquisition.
Right. But again, you know, there was plenty of Christian anti-Semitism that was taking place at that time as well. I mean, remember the Crusades had happened already. Now again, I mean, he was in Spain. He wasn't directly involved with the Crusades. But you know, all the Jews knew what had happened during the Crusades. So you know, the fact that Rabbi Bechaye can write, you know, the Christians and the Muslims are both bad, but the Muslims are worse. Yishmael is worse than Bnei Esav. Again, I'm not sure what he would have been referring to historically at his point in time, because certainly at his point in time, there had been far greater anti-Semitism coming out of the Christian world than out of the Muslim world. But you read it in 2014, and, you know, it's like reading the news. It's much, much holier than reading the news. But I mean, it's mamish the times that we're living in. You know, Yishmael has no rachmanis under any circumstances whatsoever. Oy va'avoy, oyvecho is lashon oy va'avoy. Woe is to me if I fall into their hands. I just read this Rabbeinu Bechaye, and just, you know, got chills. You know, reading what he has to say about it. So I think it says it means what it says it means. In other words, that, you know, even with all of their evil, there will come a time where they recognize the truth of Yiddishkeit and they will give up their hatred against the Jewish people and they will join us. Yeah, so that's the Gemara says that there's not going to be Geiris when Mashiach comes. Maybe this means in the time leading up to when Mashiach comes. I don't know. Maybe it means in that, you know, in that brief period of time before the Gula is complete. I don't know exactly what it means, but he definitely says that there's going to be a point at which both of these nations are going to be Magaya.
You know, yeah. It was human, the whole sin of, you know, no, it's human, but everybody who doesn't believe in what they're believing in is really that they feel like they're doing the Rebbeinu Shlomo's work.
Right.
They're doing the sad, that's not the Nazis had ideology. You know, Jews, this and that. Okay, then this is what the Rebbeinu Shlomo built.
Right.
So really, they are not that far away from once they're set straight.
Right. No. Right. There is a religious impulse, a very misguided religious impulse, but there is a
right. From a law,
So again, I bring this Rabbeinu Bechaye to your attention. I mean, it's a fascinating Rabbeinu Bechaye, and again, I don't know what he would have been talking about had he only been talking about the events in his own time. I mean, it really seems like an almost prophetic Rabbeinu Bechaye describing, you know, the events of today, you know, in terms of the oivim and the sonim that we have to deal with today. This is probably our last year for this calendar year, the Jewish calendar year. Next week, already this time, is Leil Rosh Hashanah. You know, so certainly it should be a Ksiva Chasima Tova for all of us. It's been a very difficult year, particularly with the Bnei Yisrael and their interaction with Jews, with non-Jews, with the Oivim. Halavai we should see the kiyum of this Rabbeinu B'chai, that the Oivim should come and join us, that they should be Megayer, that they should come and join our ranks, and that the enmity, the hatred should come to an end, and we should see B'yis Mashiach Sidkenu B'meira. On a totally logistic level, so I think, you know, obviously next week we're not going to have a shir, it's Leo Rosh Hashanah a week from tonight. Be'ezus Hashem, we'll try the Wednesday of Aseres Yimei Tshuva to have a shir, a retro shir, meaning Parshas Hashinu is next Shabbos, but during the Aseres Yimei Tshuva we'll learn the Rabbeinu B'chaim Parshas Hashinu backwards, you know, in retrospect, even though the Parsha will have passed already at that point. And you know, then probably we'll give a shir on Vezos HaBracha on Leil Simchas Torah, as we've been doing over the past couple of years. And then, you know, following that, we'll move on to our next commentator for the upcoming year. Thinking about the Kli Yakar as a possibility. We are open to suggestion, if anyone has any strong suggestions in a different direction, but that's what we're thinking about at the present time.
When you say gear, it's not good. Gear is loving the Jews.
I think in this context he means gears. I think he means they'll become Jews.